go back to the mountaintop. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was first and foremost a preacher of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And much of the imagery of his message came from being grounded in the Word of God. He used a lot of the minor prophets' imagery for justice, for mercy, and for righteousness. And the imagery that he used in his famous "I Have a Dream" speech can be traced back to Joseph when Joseph had a dream of what the future was going to be like. And in his final public address, we find Dr. King saying, "And I've looked over and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. And I'm so happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord." And the imagery of the promised land and the mountaintop comes directly out of the Old Testament reading in our Deuteronomy that we read this morning. God had promised to lead his people out of Egypt into a promised land where they would find freedom and justice and a place to call their own. And God had appointed Moses as the leader to lead his people into the promised land. However, Moses stumbled in his leadership, and God said, as a result, you will not enter the promised land. And Moses begged and he begged with God, and God finally said, that's it. I don't want to hear about this anymore. I will allow you to go up to the mountaintop, and from there you can see the promised land that I am going to lead my people into. And whenever you see a church called Mount Pisgah Baptist Church, Methodist Church, Presbyterian Church, that's the mountain that Moses went up on and saw the promised land. Now, Dr. King, he had a similar experience as Moses in a spiritual sense, in that he saw the promised land from the mountain upon which he was standing. And it was a promised land not just for black people, but for all people. Yet Dr. King had an inkling in his heart that he wasn't going to get to the promised land. As a matter of fact, he said, I probably will not live to see my 40th birthday. This year, we are going to observe the 40th anniversary of Dr. King's death. And 40 is a significant number in the Bible in that it often represents a generation. The children of Israel spent 40 years wandering in the desert because they wouldn't enter the promised land when God told them to go into it. And all the soldiers, except two, Joshua and Caleb, who were over the age of 20, had to die out before they could get into the promised land. Now, one of the things about the passing of the leaders of a generation is that once the leaders are gone, people have a tendency very quickly to forget where it was they used to be and where it was God had brought them from. Now, we live in a world today in which all of our young adults, 39 and under, were not alive to see the world in which Dr. King began his ministry. They don't understand what it is to have the official government endorsement of Jim Crow laws. They don't understand the burden of segregation. They don't understand the unity that once existed in the black community. They don't understand the role the black church played in our society. And many of them don't even understand the big fuss that Dr. King and the other civil rights leaders seem to be complaining about. One of our own young people asked me one day, right back there in the sanctuary, was Dr. King a real person? They don't understand the doctrines of last hired and first fired. They don't understand that just because you had the money to live somewhere didn't mean you could live there. They don't understand that you could be the best player on the team and still get cut. Some of them are even naive enough to believe that if they had been around and some Southern sheriff or policeman had disrespected them, they would have given them a piece of their mind. They have no concepts that had they done that, their brains would have been splattered against a jail cell wall. And the only explanation is he slipped on his shoe in the jail cell. nobody would have known what happened to you. Now, I was born in 1956. I know that comes as a shock. Some of y'all think it was 76, but I really was born in 1956. I know it's a shock. Get over the shock so I can move on. I was born in 1956 in the heart of Georgia in a little town called Dublin. It was a large agricultural place with plenty of farmland all around it, owned by whites but worked by Negroes. Now, most of you never heard of Dublin, and I want you to know I discovered you haven't heard about it because it was intentional you haven't heard about it. You see, the United States Air Force wanted to build an Air Force base in Dublin, but the local politicians fought against it. And the Air Force base was eventually built in the western part of Georgia in the city of Warner Robins. If any of you ever heard of Warner Robins Air Force Base, that base should have been built in Dublin. But the local politicians fought against it because if they built that Air Force base there, it would mean they would need workers. It would also mean that too many Negro workers would have to leave the farms to work in decent paying jobs. And they would rather keep Negroes poor and dependent on them than to have the local economy built up. Now, I grew up in a place where the bathrooms were still labeled men, women, and colored. I can still see those signs at that gas station there in Dublin. I remember what it was to pass by white and colored fountains. I remember not being able to go into the local Dairy Queen. They had a little side window that if they weren't too busy, you could go over to that side window. To this day, every time I go by that Dairy Queen, I just cannot bring myself to go into that place. I remember when we got new books at school that already had kids' names in them. I couldn't figure out how it was they got their name in them before we got to use them. Only later did I discover those were the names of the white kids who got to use our new books a few years before we even got to them. I remember going to the Greyhound bus station and being in the backside of the station and seeing the nice, comfortable seats over there in the white section, and we had a wooden plaque going across for us to sit on. Now, the one thing we did have in our favor that they didn't know about, and if they did, they probably would have switched it, was that when we went to the movies, we always had to go up in the balcony. That's really where the best seats were, but they didn't know it, so they sent us up there anyways. And every now and then, a few of us would get brave enough to throw some popcorn over the balcony down upon them. And some white guy would always come up there with his flashlight. Who did that? Who did that? Never did know who did it. I remember that we had one city swimming pool. And couldn't nobody get in it but whites. But then came integration. And when it came time to integrate that pool, city council voted to fill that thing in with dirt, put some asphalt over it, and call it a tennis court. So we never did get to swim with anybody in that pool because we never got to swim in that pool. I can remember there were plenty of school buses in Dublin, but only two of them were assigned to the Negro schools. After you reached seventh grade, you had to pay a dime to catch the school bus. Dime was a whole lot of money back then. You could get you two candy bars and some potato chips almost for a dime. So a lot of us, we had to walk as the school bus passed us on by. I remember the white section of town seemed like they always had asphalt paved streets. But over there in our section of town, every now and then a bulldozer would come through and flatten out the dirt, red Georgia dirt clay, and make the road hard again. And that was our asphalt road until the next time it rained, and then they'd have to come through and do it all over again. I also remember there were four classes in my grade. There was group A, group B, group C, and group D. And there were about 25 of us in each of those classes, which means there were 50 black boys in my elementary and junior high school. Well, we had to integrate when I reached the ninth grade. When it came time to graduate in the newly integrated high school, there were only 5 black males that graduated in that class. Before integration, everybody in the school was black. You did not even think about talking back to a teacher. You didn't even talk back to a kitchen aide. I remember in class the spanking board that they had. I can still see Mr. Meyer saying, "Bend over." I hate to admit it, but Mr. Hall, he had me bend over before I could be allowed back in one class. I remember that when your parent came to a school, that was the most embarrassing thing for you, your parent, and your entire family. I remember when we used to call each other brother and sister, and you gave each other the sign of the fist, and it was like you knew you were in a united struggle together. I recall one of the first episodes I had with the law at age 12 in Georgia. It was the same year in which Dr. King was assassinated. I had gone to Woolworth's to buy a gift, and I had my money in my hand. It was a $5 bill as I left the store. And I went to another 5- and 10-cent store because I couldn't find whatever it was I was looking for. And I made a purchase with that $5 bill. And on my way home, as I got in front of the First Methodist Church, it was a white church, it's still there in Dublin today, this police car pulled up beside me, and the policeman said, "Boy, you did anything you weren't supposed to today?" And I said, "No, sir, no, sir." He said, "You sure you didn't do anything you weren't supposed to?" I said, "No, sir, no, sir." He said, "Well, get on in the back seat." So they started asking me questions in the car, and I was careful to say, "No, sir, no, sir, no, sir," and "Yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir," when the time came, and they took me back to Woolworth's. And when I went into Woolworth's with these two policemen, this white lady came out and she said, "Yes, that's the one, that's the one, that's the Negro who took the money out of the cash register." And I confessed and pleaded my innocence and said I had done no such thing. And she insisted, she said, "There were 5 $1 bills in that cash register, and he took them, and I saw him going out the store with them." I told the officers, I says, "Look, you can take me to the other store, and I can prove I gave the cashier over there a $5 bill." They said, "Boy, you're lying, but we got to take you over there to prove that you're lying." They took me over to the other store, and I'm looking for the clerk, and I could not find the clerk. And they said, "We knew you was lying." And just as they said that, she showed up. I said, "There she is, there she is." And they went over to her, and they asked her, "Did this boy give you a $5 bill?" She looked at me, and she said, "Yeah, he gave me a $5 bill, but I don't know where he got it from." The police then took me to jail, 12 years old, made me strip butt naked, had me bend over like I'm going to stash some money somewhere. And afterwards, they said, they let me go and told me they'd be coming to visit my house later that day. I went home about terrified. I went and I called, got with my brother Greg, and I told him, I said, "Greg, you'll never believe what happened to me." And I told him the whole story, and I didn't know it, but my father was listening to what I was saying through the wall, and he came over and he said, "Are you sure you didn't take any money out the cash register?" I says, "Yeah, I'm sure." He was bold enough to challenge the police on this. I didn't realize how bold of a step that was to go down and challenge the word of a white woman against a little black boy there in Georgia, but he did. And when they went and they checked into the matter a little bit further, they found the 5 missing dollars were still in the cash register. The lady had seen a black kid walk out with some money and just assumed he had to be a thief. Now, Dr. King didn't know about my story, but he did know of the story of countless thousands whose lives were being twisted and abused and destroyed through racism and segregation. He knew our society was bent on making us feel inferior and as though somehow we were less than human. His desire was for an integrated society and was rooted in the belief that if we could all just live together, we could see that all of us have tremendous potential and all of us are equal and all of us are capable of doing great things. There was only one problem with the dream that Dr. King had in 1963, and that is we don't want to be equal. People want to have an upper hand. They want to have an advantage so that they can maintain some kind of control over others. You see, we are not basically good as human beings. Oppression, greed, and thirst for power, they don't know color boundaries. That's why Jesus had to come to die for all people, no matter what color they were, that we might have life. Because without Christ, our hearts are no different than the races or anybody else's heart in society. Now, here we are 45 years removed from the dream of Dr. King. And what have we achieved? Do we really believe all men are created equal when if you are poor and you go rob a bank, you might get $1,500, but you will get 15 to 20 years in jail? But if you are rich and you rob that same bank of about $20 million, you might get a jail sentence of 1 year, but you might get probation, and they might make you pay back $100,000. Now, when I do the math, I think that I could go to jail for a year if I know I got to keep $19 million of the $20 million that I stole. Matter of fact, how many of you know people sit in jail for free every day? You remember his speech, "I have a dream." The desire for the children of former slaves and former slave owners to sit together at the table of brotherhood in Georgia? Well, the year our school had to integrate just conveniently coincided with the founding of the Christian school in Dublin. As a matter of fact, many Christian schools throughout the South started at the same time integration had to be enforced. Look at them, 1970, 71, 72, 73. Isn't it amazing how God just moved all at once? So much for sitting at the same table when we can't even attend the same school. Dublin today is larger than it has ever been, and the school is smaller than it has ever been because most of the whites have pulled out of the system and now go to the Christian school. But we don't have to look all the way to Dublin to find this problem. All we got to do is just look right here where we at. Because if we look at the east side of Cleveland, what color are most of them folks over there? And what color are the ones on the west side of Cleveland? So we still don't have this table of brotherhood that he saw. Remember his dream for Mississippi? He had a dream that Mississippi would become an oasis of freedom and justice. Today, Mississippi has the largest percentage of blacks than any other state. In 2005, it ranked second in the percent of births to unmarried mothers. It ranked second in the teen birth rate. Instead of Dr. King's dream of an oasis, it seems more like a withering stream drying up in a desert. What about a nation in which people are not judged by the content of their skin, but by the content of their, not color of their skin, but by the content of their character? Do we do that? What do you think of when you see three young black males walking down the streets with sagging pants? Do you see a potential doctor, lawyer, and teacher? Or do you immediately see three thugs on their way to jail? Didn't even bother to check into the content of their character, did you? Well, Pastor Toby still wants you to pull your pants up, but what difference does it make with your character with your belt? If you want a job, though, you better pull it up and remember where it is you are. One of the things about Dr. King is that he was an American who challenged the policies of the very country he loved. He took on an American president over the issue of the injustice of the Vietnam War, and he lost all kind of support over it. One day a reporter came up to him, and Dr. King said, the man obviously didn't know him too well, because he said, Dr. King, don't you think you're going to have to stop now opposing the war and move in line with the administration's policy? As I understand it, it has hurt the budget of your organization, and people who once respected you have lost respect for you. Don't you feel like you're going to have to change your position? Dr. King said, I looked at him and I had to say, sir, I'm sorry you don't know me. I am not a consensus leader. I do not determine what is right and wrong by looking at the budget of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. I do not go out and take some kind of Gallup poll to find out the majority opinion. You see, a genuine leader is not a searcher for consensus, but rather a molder of consensus. Now, here we are in the midst of a war in Iraq. How many of you believe this war is still morally wrong? And yet, how many of our presidential candidates have actually come out and say, this is a moral issue of what is right and wrong? You see, Dr. King wouldn't fit in any more in today's society than he did 40 years ago when he tried speaking the truth. Do you think he'd be outraged that every time we talk about universal health care for the citizens of this nation, the first thing people who already got insurance say is, what about the cost? What about the cost? And yet our Congress gave our president a blank check to declare war on a nation that was not a threat to us. He even refused to talk about how much it would cost. Even now, most of us have no idea why we are fighting in Iraq, and we have no idea about how much money it is even costing us to do it. Every now and then, they try to get us all psyched out, saying, it's better to fight the terrorists in Baghdad than in Boston. Well, I remember in the Vietnam War, they told us, we got to fight the communists in Saigon to keep from fighting them in San Francisco. Well, I noticed they never did come to San Francisco, and instead of us leaving them there, we done shipped some of our jobs to those same communists, so I guess they won by staying right where they were. Why is the freedom of Iraq more dear to our president's heart than whether or not Americans can afford prescription medicine or go see a doctor? Why is rebuilding the Iraqi economy more important than Americans who have seen their good jobs lost and shipped overseas in the name of global commerce, and now people making a fraction of what it was they used to make? I do think Dr. King would ask these kind of questions, but I think by far the greatest disappointment for Dr. King would not be the failure of our government to deal earnestly with the war or with racism or the failure of whites to admit that racism still exists and still benefits them. I believe that he would be most disappointed with what became of the Negro. Somewhere in the evolution from the Negro to the black to the African American, we lost our soul as a people in exchange for the almighty dollar. God Almighty had been our savior, but now he's been replaced by the all-powerful Benjamins. We used to have young people dying for freedom, getting beaten up sitting at counters. Today we have our young people dying for money out in somebody's turf in the gang and drug wars. In the 60s and 70s, those of us, especially in the South, we got tired of folks who didn't know how to say Negro. They called us Negras and Nagras and everything but a Negro. So we got rid of the term Negro altogether, and James Brown came out and said, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. Let me ask you this. Who is it that betrayed us and returned calling us niggas as though it was some badge of honor? How could a group with a name like Niggas with an Attitude become famous? Why do we see our young people with caps on N.W.A. on their clothing? Did they completely miss the revolution of Dr. King? In the 60s and 70s, we called each other sisters and brothers. And when you had that clenched fist, there was just a unity. You didn't even have to say it. You just walked down the street, and we knew we were together. Look at some of the old civil rights pictures, and you will see men lined up along the streets with a sign on them that simply says, I am a man. I am a man. I am a man. They were subject to ridicule, harassment, and possible beatings for saying that in public. Let me ask you this. Who was it that came behind us, stripped us of our dignity and humanity by making us feel it's an honor by somebody for somebody to say, that's my dog? A dog is like a slave owned by a master. Why return to the life of slavery and inhumanity? We are not dogs. I don't care how you say it. People died to make us more than three-fifths of a white person. And now we're willing to make ourselves even less. Jesus said, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Why insist on going back to bondage? You know, in our racially segregated schools, we had a host of black male teachers. We had respect in our schools. We had teachers working to invest themselves in us, always looking for who was going to be the next one to shine. Because we knew when one of us got lifted up, all of us got lifted up. They expected us to succeed. Today, many of those bright male minds, they didn't go to college. They went to prison. So African-American teachers are lacking all over the place. I'll never forget one of my favorite teachers, Mr. Davis. Mr. Davis was 6'6", and he had a greater interest in teaching us than he had in playing basketball. You know, there are more of us in prison today than there were under the chains of oppression and segregation. There are more of us dropping out of high school today than there was before integration. You know, there used to be a stigma and a shame to going to jail. Now, among our young people, it's almost like your badge of honor. How much time you got, man? I had 2 years. But you know, I done did three. Going to jail has replaced the high school diploma. Only problem is, by the time our young people discover a prison record follow you the rest of your life, it is too late to break the cycle of low-paying jobs, and prison itself starts becoming a revolving door because you can't get a job, so you ain't got no money, so you do something you ain't supposed to, and you're right back in there. And remember this, those 2 years that you spend in there are very small compared to the lifetime sentence of being a black felon, which has a set of chains all of its own around your legs. It's the same thing as being on the chain gang with a chain and a ball around you. First thing they want to know when you apply for a job, do you have a record? How can you build a strong family when you got one or both parents sitting in jail? Usually related with something to do with the drug trade. Now, we all know racism exists. We all know we got a better chance of going to jail than any other race. With those kind of odds in our favor, we ought to be doubly sure we don't make any mistakes. We ought to be doing all we can to stay on the right side of the law, get our education behind us before we start having babies. Now, we have even turned on each other in the class war between African Americans. We hear folks say, we don't want to live with those people. We don't want our kids going to school with those people. We consider it a badge of success when we don't have to be around those people anymore. You know something? Used to be white folks talking like that. But today it's often the middle class blacks talking about the inner city blacks. We have even tried to label them as less than human in the inner city. Remember how they used to say all Negroes were lazy, shiftless, and thieves? I never could understand how they could claim we was lazy, they was the owners, and we was doing all the work as slaves, but we was the one lazy. Now, we still using that same mentality, only now there's only a particular group of those that are lazy and shiftless and whatever, and those are the ones in the inner city, in the ghetto. When certain things happen or when people do certain things that are kind of out of step, we are, oh, that's just so ghetto. I want you to know I got me 2 master's degrees. I have me a doctor of ministry degree, and I live in the ghetto. So I wish someone would go around saying, that is so ghetto. We have become a people without a soul in pursuit of the American dollar, the American lifestyle, getting it for me. We have very little moral values, and our society keeps trying to push the church on the fringe of society. Keeps saying, separation of church and state, separation of church and state, separation of church and state. Now watch when it's time for the election. All of them all of a sudden want to come to the church, come to the church, come to the church. Where do we learn our moral values? Heaven help us if we're getting it from the media. You see, we have to realize that Dr. King opened a door to a larger society. But our destiny still hinges on the individual choices that we make with our lives. We have to make the choice to avoid poverty. That means we gotta stay in school, we gotta stop going to prison, we gotta stop having babies, and we gotta start building strong families. You know, the bad thing about being poor is that our parents kept us from knowing we were poor. How many of you were poor and didn't know it? You just as poor as you could be and didn't know it. How come we didn't know it? Because our parents had a roof over our head. We ate every day. We had clothes. We enjoyed being with each other. We just thought we had the best family in the whole world. You don't know what it's like to be poor until you were the one paying the bills. Our parents knew they was poor. When you trying to figure out, are they going to turn off the heat or the electricity? You trying to figure out, how am I going to cut this chicken bone into 15 parts? You trying to figure all this out. You as parents know what it's like to be poor. But the kids think, hey, this is natural. This is life. And they don't think, I need to be doing something to get beyond this. Now, if you know you ain't got a job, you know you can't even support yourself, You know you just as broke as can be. What on earth are you doing having sex? What are you doing having sex? You know you ain't got no money. Why make everybody else in your family poor so you can go out and do your thing? Well, I'll keep on going. We have to determine how we are going to treat and refer to one another as members of our race against those who denigrate us. How in the world can we be happy being referred to as hoes and bitches and this, that, and the other thing, and we buying this music, and we talk, all I'm doing is listening to the beat. All you doing is making sure that they keep turning out this filth. We as parents, we the first ones need to get rid of it. And then we need to say to our kid, we ain't giving you a dime on that mess. And then we need to tell them, if I find it in my house, it's going in the trash. You young people who say you are Christians, why fill your mind with this garbage? Why keep an industry going? You know, if everybody in the church, forget them folks out in the world, if everybody in the church said, I ain't buying no more of this stuff, it would change the industry overnight. But as long as we keep talking about, all I'm doing is listening to the beat, we getting beat up. We need to get back to our spiritual roots in the church and have a moral compass for the next generation. We can decide to try to live in the promised land that Dr. King wanted us to enter. None of us should let his life or his death be in vain. It's time for all of us to go back up on the mountaintop and do a reality check for where we are headed. Now, I want you to know that if your promised land doesn't include Jesus, you're just looking at a nightmare. Jesus said, I have come that you might have life and have it more abundantly. My friends, that's a promised land that's worth your lifetime of investment. Anything short of that, and you're missing the boat. Go back up on the mountaintop. Get another dream, another vision for what God can do through you. Amen. Let's pray.